What's up, everyone? We are your internet historians, and in today's episode, we will be discussing the history behind the movie Loving. Today, it's also going to be just Lisa and I again, because Alec is still unpacking. You know, she has so many boxes that she has to unpack. Yeah. So it's like, you know, she just needs a little extra time.
So I don't know about you, but I've been keeping up with not all the Olympics. I just always keep up with the gymnastics stuff. And I was just telling Nicole earlier, I was like, I was crying and I've been crying this like entire time just because I don't know. I posted on my story too about how, like, when I watch regular sports, I'm like, okay, cool, I guess. And then the Olympics, I'm like, they just worked so hard for this, like, their entire lives, you know? And then
dude, some of those people that are competing are so young.
Skateboarding, because they just introduced skateboarding in the Olympics, and I think they were like 13-year-olds.
Yeah, they're super freaking
young. Yeah, I'm so surprised they allow that. I thought that like overall the rule is 16 years of age. I don't know.
I'm like, I just barely started being interested in any type of athletic anything. Yeah, maybe high school age.
Well, that is like the hard part, is because like, say, so, you know, I'm into gymnastics. And so sometimes like some of the girls just feel so discouraged because they'll say like, oh, I kind of started a little late at 7, and you're like, 7's still pretty young. Okay. And it's funny, but
what age do they start at then? 1?
They'll say like, they do like a mom and tots class. So that means when they're a toddler, that's when they kind of start gymnastics. And even then it's obviously like basic things like forward or somersaults and stuff like that. But that's like, I guess, the prime time to start, you know, and the mom and tots classes.
I wonder, do they put their kid in it knowing that their goal is for them to
end up
in the Olympics or whatever? Or they just do it for funsies and then they're like, you know what? They're really good at this.
Well, obviously when you're like 3-4 years old, your body is still developing. So you can't really do certain things. It's mostly, but you can tell pretty quickly a kid's coordination at that, not at the time, but like you can start telling pretty early on how coordinated they are, you know, their ability to take direction and kind of fix whatever it is. Anyways, as far as I know, like everyone who goes into gymnastics, they don't go into it thinking they're going to become an Olympian. It's mostly like, you know, they start and then the coach is like, hey, you're pretty good at this. You want to kind of try something harder? And then the parents are like, sure, you know, like, and they talk to the kid obviously as well. And then they kind of keep them going and going and going. Yeah. And that's the other hard part, is that sometimes like when I was a kid and they asked me to kind of do the harder, like get on the competition level, I tried it out and I said, I didn't like it. I was like, this is way too intense for me. It was like 3 hours of, and I went from, you know, going in once a week for 1 hour, and they're asking now to do like twice a week for 3 hours. And I did the 3 hour a day with 3 hours. And I was like, I hate this. This is like pretty, way too intense. And so I waited another year before going into it again. And then that's like kind of scary, because if the peak age is 16 or something like that, and you decided to wait a year, you're all of a sudden like, man, I'm far behind. So I don't know.
I'm going to ask, I couldn't remember if you did gymnastics. I remember I did gymnastics and I didn't even know how to do a cartwheel, and I still don't know how to do a cartwheel even after doing gymnastics.
I can teach you.
Well, like I kind of almost learned, and then I think after I kind of learned, I think I might have stopped going shortly after that. So it's like I didn't get a chance to keep practicing, because I remember specifically going into gymnastics being like, okay, I need to learn how to, because I was a little bit older too. I think maybe middle school, I forget exactly. Mm-hmm. So I went into it knowing that was one thing I wanted to do, and then it finally came time. And the girl was teaching me how to do it. And then, I did it like once. And then after that, I never did it again.
Today was I missed it because I thought it was today. It was yesterday. So I'm just watching the recap of the vault finals. And one of the girls, she just didn't get her steps right on vault. And she had to kind of salvage her vault. And I was like,
shall we get into it then?
Okay, yes.
Start talking about the Lovings. Interracial couple Richard and Mildred Loving fell in love and were married in 1958. They grew up in Central Point, a small town in Virginia that was more integrated than surrounding areas in the American South. Yet it was the state of Virginia where they were making their home and starting a family that first jailed and then banished them. Richard and Mildred relocated with their children to the inner city of Washington, D.C., but the family ultimately tries to find a way back to Virginia. So what did you think of this one?
Well, I was actually like really nervous going into this movie because I thought it was going to be like a mix of like Romeo and Juliet, like The Notebook, of this kind of like, oh, we're so in love and we have to deal with all these hardships and we've got to overcome it. And then by the end of the movie, I really fell in love with the couple. I loved that it wasn't that type of story, like this, yeah, like battle against the, it's us against them kind of thing. It's very much just a little more simple, you know, and I ended up really liking the movie. And then I went and watched the HBO document, or I don't know if HBO documentary, but it's a documentary.
I think it was HBO. Yeah, HBO. I think it was an HBO.
Oh, okay.
Like produced, or at least, I don't know, through their studio. I don't know exactly. I know I was going to ask you if you watched it, because I thought about it, but I was like, it's okay. Because I read something that the documentary or the movie was heavily based off of the documentary. Like they used like, you know, like, I mean, I did see some clips of things on online as well, where they kind of used the exact quotes that they actually said in the film. And like, you know, like we even saw it in the film where they shot like pictures of them, and then they like reenacted those same pictures in the film as well. And I feel like overall the movie is pretty like spot on to how
in the documentary
actually happened.
Because in the documentary they show the footage of them, like you remember in the scene where they kind of walk out of the courthouse and they're like, oh, can we talk to you for a second? And they're like, how do you think it went, or like, how do you feel about this? And she's like, I'm hopeful. Like, you see that clip of them actually answering like that. And then also when the lawyers came up and they're like, we don't want you to spend a minute longer in jail if you, you know, some, you know, I don't know. Like, it was a tongue twister when I heard him say it. I was like, I understand what you said about it. Man, it would take me like 20 takes to say that. And you actually see footage of Bernard saying that to Mildred and Richard.
Yeah, I like the film too. I just feel like there's like in the beginning, I thought it was kind of on the slower side, but it wasn't slow in a bad way. Like I was still like interested in what was being presented on the film. I also think maybe it had to do with Mildred's character because she was so soft spoken and just like, I don't know, just very quiet. And like, it was actually a longer movie too. I think that's why it might, I don't know. It just seemed like it was kind of slow, but like steady, I guess. Like it was still like interesting to watch, even though it was slow, because I mean, it's kind of like you're seeing these people live the reality of their situation. I'm sure it was kind of, you know, I think it took like over a year for them to even kind of get really things going. So I think that's kind of reflected in the movie and like how long it kind of took as well for them to reach the conclusion of their whole like trial and court cases and all that. So I enjoyed it.
It took me a long time to kind of warm up to them as well, because I felt like in the very beginning when she told him she was pregnant, I felt like they had no chemistry. I was like, this was awkward. And so I understand now, like, you know, the way they expressed it wasn't very like PDA, you know, it was
definitely.
And so, yeah, it just took me like that first scene. I was like,
and I just think it's like the time period, because I feel like even the way they described him, the real Richard, he was very like not cold,
they said
but
was
like
stoic.
Yeah, exactly. I was saying not cold, but he was like stoic, like you said. And he wasn't interested in like, you know, even being in front of the cameras and all that stuff. And so I think that's just how their relationship was. I think they're both kind of just more on the quiet side. And
yeah. So it seemed like he gave everyone a really bad first impression. Like he's very much the guy that you have to kind of like warm up to mostly because he's like introverted, you know, he doesn't care about warming up to you immediately or giving you a good impression. He's just there to be there. Anyways, so Richard Loving was born on October 29th, 1933. He was a construction worker and he is from Irish and English descent. People who knew him said he just fit in everywhere, both with a group of white people and with a group of black people. Mildred was born on July 22nd, 1939, and Mildred identified herself as Indian Rappahannock, but she was also reported of being from Cherokee or Portuguese and African American ancestry. Now I'm getting all tongue twisted. She was very shy and soft-spoken, and she was skinny and tall, which is how she earned the nickname String Bean, but Richard then shortened it to Bean. Which it's so funny because actually in the movie, I don't know if you remember, when she was like looking, she was showing her sister her like ring and everything, and they were actually like, I don't know, break, you know, getting string beans ready for dinner. And then she said something, her sister said something like, you don't need to keep looking at a string bean. You already know it's pretty. Like, you know, something a sister would say. But then I like didn't understand. I was like, is she looking at a string bean? Like what? And so I realized, oh, cause they were, you know, working with string beans on the table. So I thought they were also referring to those, not her. So anyways, when they first met, Richard was 17 and Mildred was 11. And I was like, gross. And people were like, people have said it was love at first sight. And I don't know how true that is, because Mildred also said that she didn't like him when she first met him. She thought he was arrogant. They then started dating off and on. And when Mildred turned, or when she was 18, they learned that she was pregnant. And that's also when they decided to get married. So, oh, you already said this in the synopsis, but again, another thing to note is that in Caroline County, Virginia, it was a very mixed race community, and it had been since the 19th century. The mixed race community also helped each other out. They didn't just kind of live together as like shy neighbors. Richard's father even worked for one of the wealthiest Black men in the county for 25 years, and most of Richard's closest friends were Black, and he also drag raced with them as well, which is a hobby he really enjoyed. And I had to point that out because like they say it everywhere.
I just thought it was really cool that that little like town or whatever city that they lived in was very mixed, like those people, you know, got along. And I think even from when I was reading that, they didn't really, I guess, understand the problem with them being in a relationship together, because like we already said, they're from a community that wasn't really that big of a deal.
Well, yeah, they were from a community where they already kind of were mingling together along before maybe other southern states. But I think that maybe some people knew that it was illegal to get married. Mm-hmm. And even in in the documentary, or like you'll see clips of Mildred saying like, I had no idea it was illegal to get married, you know, and because their community was so mixed. And
but that's what I guess she probably didn't know, but I'm like, well, then why did you guys go to Washington, D.C. if you didn't know?
Oh, no. She said that later. She said that she thinks Richard did know.
Oh, but that she didn't know. Okay.
She didn't know, but she later said she thinks that Richard did know. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's probably why they went dry. Yeah.
I was interested. I always feel like whenever we're recording, that's when I think of something that I'm like, oh, I should have looked into this.
I do that too.
But I was just randomly thinking, like, I wonder what her family, because I know that his family was like, whatever, because his family, I felt like, was more heavily featured as, not even his family, his mom, because, you know, she had like more like speaking lines, I feel like, but I feel like her parents didn't have that many speaking lines in the film. And I'm like, I wonder what their opinion was on their relationship and everything that was happening.
In the documentary, there was a clip of somebody interviewing the mom. So I wonder if that's why they gave her more speaking lines, because they actually had something to refer to as like what she said. And it's in the movie when, you know, Richard, she's like, you shouldn't have married her. And Richard was like, oh, I thought you liked her. And she's like, I like a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think she's kind of said something like that in the interview. I'm sure they were upset like how they portrayed in the movie, but I think they liked that how committed he was. I mean, I don't think they didn't like Richard. I think that they didn't like the aftermath of the thing that they did.
Because I feel like the dad, especially too, he never said anything really, except he just always had facial expressions in the film of like him
like disappointment.
Not even disappointment, just like he looked worried all the time and just like unsure of what was going to happen to him, which I mean, I'm sure was probably really reflective of what was actually happening. Cause I mean, at that time they weren't sure what was going to happen and they were upset that, you know, they're, daughter was being banished from the state of Virginia. So, well, let me go ahead and get into why their marriage was illegal, or like, you know, what the reason behind their arrests in the state of Virginia. So the reason the Lovings' marriage was illegal was due to, well, there's like a whole bunch of different like little laws, but this is like kind of like the main one that was referenced a lot. Illegal due to the Racial Integrity Act of 1924. So a man named Dr. Walter Ashby Plecker, who was a white supremacist and a eugenist who held the position of Registrar of Virginia Bureau of Vital Statistics. So him, along with the Anglo-Saxons Club of America, were kind of key in persuading the Virginia General Assembly of, like, you know, to enact this Racial Integrity Act. And they basically wanted to end an amalgamation or miscegenation of people with different races. So the act reinforced racial segregation by prohibiting interracial marriage and classifying the races. So I think that was like the main thing with this law. It was like classifying what a white person is and what classifies a Black person, basically. So white was classified as a person who has no trace whatsoever of any blood other than Caucasian. All non-whites, including Native Americans, were classified as colored. And the act was a part of a series of racial integrity laws. Like I said, there were kind of a lot of them that were enacted in Virginia to reinforce racial hierarchies and prohibit the mixing of races. Other statutes included the Public Assemblages Act of 1926, which required the racial segregation of all public meeting areas, and a 1930 act that defined any person with even a trace of African American ancestry as Black, which is the like one drop rule that was, you know, used a lot to say, like, if you had even one little bit of Black in you, then you were just Black. That's it. That's how they classified you as. So how they were caught pretty much as it was shown in the film.
Didn't you think that was like police brutality right there? Like, you know,
when
I don't
they
know.
Came in there.
Yeah, it made me think of like Breonna Taylor, you know, how they just like barged into their place like that. And Richard.
Well, it's interesting. Like, I was like, why didn't they lock their doors? But I'm like, during that time, I don't think people really locked their
doors. I think in the documentary, I think Richard said that they actually were banging on the doors.
And I did see that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So they did wake up to the doors. Like the door knocking. And then by the time they kind of like register what's happening, the police already like knocked already open there, the door and like, we're in their bedroom.
Yeah. I was like, what the heck? And so after she became pregnant in June of 1958, the couple went to Washington, D.C., as you already said, to marry. And then when they returned back, it wasn't like the movie or whatever, they made it seem like it was like a day or so after, but I guess it happened apparently like a couple weeks after.
Yeah. I have the dates. It was, they got married on June 2nd, 1958. And they were the first time they got arrested was July 11th, 1958. Yeah. So it was a little over a month.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they came in around 2 a.m. as we see in the film. And I guess when the police came in at that time, it's because they wanted to like catch them in the act of like doing it, basically, because I guess that was also another law. So you couldn't be married interracially. And then you also couldn't like have like any type of like sexual relations with a person of a different race or whatever. So I think they were trying to catch them in both of those things so they could like do a double whammy on them. But obviously, first of all, who's up at 2 a.m.? Okay, I'm sorry. Like, I'm like, don't you do that right before you go to sleep? Not like at 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't know. Anyways, I'm like, that's too late for me.
It's so, yeah. Just gross. It's such a violation of privacy.
Totally. So in the film, I think they had it that Richard was one who like kind of pointed at their marriage certificate on the wall, but I guess it was kind of Mildred who was the one who was trying to like, hey, that's our marriage certificate. It's right there. And I think they were kind of asked, or they told the police like, oh, we're married. And then they're like, not here. You're not, or basically your certificate doesn't hold up here. And then I thought it was also kind of interesting that the police said that. So I'm like, okay, so then if they're not technically married in Virginia, why are you arresting them then? If their certificate doesn't hold up, then there's no point in you arresting them in Virginia, because technically that doesn't count. But I think it was more that they tried to like evade Virginia
They try to look for a loophole.
Yeah, but basically. So that's, I guess, why they're arrested and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I was just like, okay, but you saying it's not valid, so then there's no reason to arrest them then. But I guess even like cohabitating is kind of also against the law there. So that's another reason why they went ahead and arrested them. And again, like pretty much like how the ACLU got involved is, like I said earlier too, it's like all like pretty spot on in the movie how they presented it to what it was actually like in real life.
It was a little bit different, because wasn't it that she did write to Bobby Kennedy, Robert Kennedy? I don't know who calls him Bobby, who calls him Robert, but we'll call him Bobby, you know,
the attorney general.
Robert F. Kennedy. So she did write to Bobby, and then actually what I like saw was that he wrote back to her, mm-hmm. and he said to actually contact the ACLU, and in the movie they just gave a phone call and
in the movie he was the one who contacted the ACLU. But I mean, I guess similar in the sense that she did write him, and then that did bring her and the ACLU together, because mm-hmm. he referred her.
I understand, like, in recent terms, if I wrote a letter to, I don't know who the attorney general is right now.
Same.
I was like, if I wrote a letter to Judge Judy, okay, and Judge Judy was like, I can't help you with this, but you know, this group of people could, and I called them up and I was like, yo, Judge Judy referred me, I think they'd be like, we don't believe you, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think that in in a way, they had to do that in the movie for us to understand like why they immediately took it on, versus probably then they were like, oh, Bobby referred you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, that's we'll true. Take your case, you know? Also, I don't know if you saw, but Mildred has like the most beautiful handwriting.
I did not see.
And I think it's
kind of, I mean, it makes sense. I think penmanship was pretty big back in the day, not like how it is now.
Did you
like,
ever it's get not a grade? At all now. Did you ever get a grade on handwriting?
No, I did not.
I did. Like, I think in like second or third grade, there was an actual like little section for handwriting. Mm-hmm. I think actually it was called penmanship, and I had to ask my mom what that meant. And I remember.
I mean, unless I did, and I just don't recall it, but I'm pretty sure I didn't.
You know what's weird is like, I remember it as like, I got like, how do I say this? Like, it wasn't like A, B, C, D. It was like outstanding or like excellent. Oh, or, you know, remember there's like a different scoring. Yeah. That's also really confusing. Like, why do we have two different scores?
So Kennedy referred her to the ACLU, and then the ACLU assigned volunteer cooperating attorneys, Bernard S. Cohen and Philip J. Hirschkopf. They filed a motion on behalf of the Lovings in Virginia's Caroline County Circuit Court, and that requested the court to vacate the criminal judgments and set aside the Loving sentences on the grounds that the Virginia miscegenation statutes ran counter to the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. It then went to the courts in Virginia, where they got denied twice until they finally could get it into the Supreme Court. That's the part I did actually dumb it down, because there was a whole bunch of other stuff. Yeah. So then I was just like, they went to those courts that you saw in the film, and then they eventually went to the Supreme Court. The Lovings did not attend the oral arguments in Washington, but one of their lawyers, Bernard S. Cohen, conveyed the message he had been given by Richard Loving, which again was similar to the movie. And Richard said, "Mr. Cohen, tell the court I love my wife, and it is just unfair that I can't live with her in Virginia." On June 12th, 1967, the Supreme Court issued a unanimous 9-0 decision in favor of the Lovings that overturned their criminal convictions and struck down Virginia's anti-miscegenation law. Side note too, before I go into this next bit, I was watching some like news clips of this case during the time, and oh my God, it's so like, it's crazy how recent all this stuff happened. Like, I mean, like, I like watching, I'm like, oh my God, I keep forgetting that they have video devices to record these things and whatever. And so like, when I'm watching like the news clips from this time frame when they were reporting on the Lovings case, I'm just like, this is, I don't know why I can't like wrap my mind around it, because it's just like, I mean, weird hearing a news report.
Like, I see some footage that are in color too, and I'm like, what?
Color? No, yeah. I think what I watched was in color, I'm pretty sure. But because I mean, it was like what, the 60s, right? Late 60s.
Yes.
It was almost the 70s. And it was just weird hearing like how the news reporter was like talking about these things. Like, I just feel like people, like news reports today, just wouldn't use the same type of language that,
of course not, yeah,
that they were using it. I just felt weird, and
you're cringing. Yeah. You're like,
ugh. Yeah, a little bit. I was just like, it's kind of weird. Like, I mean, they were professional still, but it's just like, I don't know, just the language, you wouldn't hear anyone use that, those types of words to talk about like Black people or anything like that. So it's just like, I don't know, it was weird. But anyways, so in the court's opinion, they addressed whether Virginia's Racial Integrity Act violated the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause, which reads, "Nor shall any state deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws." Virginia argued that its anti-miscegenation law did not violate the Equal Protection Clause because it equally burdened both whites and non-whites, since the punishment for violating the statute was the same regardless of the offender's race. A white person who married a Black person received the same punishment as a Black person who married a white person. Which also, again, another side note, I guess the miscegenation or whatever was like a word that basically these white supremacist people made up to kind of just say like, oh, basically mixed races. And they made it seem like, we already said it, I already said it earlier, but it was just, I didn't say that that word was a made up word that they created to kind of say like the mixing of the races. And again, the white hierarchical, they wanted to keep the white race, the like quote unquote pure race, and have like, no, they didn't want to make it become inferior by having people mixed together and not being like 100% pure white. So the court had accepted this equal burden argument 84 years earlier, which again is also interesting because this was not the first case to go before the courts regarding a interracial marriage. 84 years earlier in 1883, there was a Pace v. Alabama case where they did use that argument that the Virginia people were trying to use against the Lovings. But in this case, the Lovings case, the court rejected the argument and overruled Pace. "We reject the notion that the mere equal application of a statute concerning racial classifications is enough to remove the classifications from the 14th Amendment's proscription of all invidious racial discriminations. Another quote, the court ruled that because the races of the people involved were the only factors determining whether or not they broke the law violated the Equal Protection Clause. So that was, I feel like, a lot of legal mumbo jumbo.
Yeah. But
basically, the courts just said, hey, you can't say, you can't have like a law based on people's races and say, and if that's the only key in the, in your argument, that's like your argument's not valid, basically. And so then they just ruled against Virginia people and said the Lovings can be married, which is yay.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked a lot of their arguments too, Bernard and Philip, because they touched on slavery. And yes. I think somebody also was like, is this kind of like a health, I forgot what health and work or something else, but mostly they were like, I guess some of the people were concerned, like, they were saying stuff like, oh, when Richard passes away, then Mildred can't collect his Social Security benefits. Mm-hmm. And then they were kind of trying to twist and turn that. Like, so is this kind of a benefits type of deal they're having? And it's like, no, again, it's going back to slavery. And it's just going back to like how when a married couple have the right to earn benefits after their spouse passes away. And I do think that's really important, because unfortunately later Richard does pass away before his time. And, you know, Richard was the one who was making the money in their family. Like, he was a construction worker and she was a housewife. So if they didn't get this figured out, then she, you know, kind of would be left. Well, I think her family would take, I mean, I'm sure the
families it would be more take difficult care of each other. For her.
Yeah, exactly. I did look into the 14th Amendment, because I was like, I thought that the 14th Amendment had something to do with like slavery or something. It actually has, it actually is just about equal rights, is that if you were born in the United States of America, you know, you're a citizen, you're a full citizen, you get all the rights to the, or you get the protection of the law or whatever. So that, and then they also said this is also, you know, applies to enslaved people and then the children of these enslaved people. And I thought that was interesting too, that because I guess I like immediately thought they were going to go in the approach of slavery, but they also wanted to identify the 14th Amendment.
That was, it was talked a lot of in this.
Yeah. I was like 14th, 14th. And I was like, can somebody tell me what the 14th Amendment is though?
Well, we talked about it in Lincoln. Were you there or were you not there during?
I can't remember. Episode? I can barely remember. Okay. First of all, there's 14 amendments. I can't remember all of them. I can only remember the first one, which is like what, the freedom of speech or something.
I think it was Lincoln that it was, we talked a lot about the 14th Amendment, but I'm again, sorry. There was a lot.
I know I call myself an internet historian, but no, I cannot remember every single amendment. You know, I know we have all these laws and rules, and I know people are associated with certain amendments, but I'm not going to remember the number of which one. Oh, also, I wanted to know as well, like how long everything took, because I, in the movie, again, it seems like it went pretty a little faster. First of all, the children never age, so it makes it look like it went really quickly. I just want to kind of point that out, because they got married in 1958, right? And then they were kicked out. A year later is when they got their first trial, which was the one that banished them from Virginia. And then they moved to DC. And then while they were living there, and I guess when Donald did get hit by a car, that is when Mildred was like, I'm fucking done with this shit, you know? And so in 1963 is when they first filed the motion to ask if the judge Bazile will, you know, overturn basically that sentence that he first and said in the beginning. And then it wasn't until April 1967 is when the case made to the Supreme Court. So yeah, just that's like 10 years later.
It almost took like a decade. Yeah.
So after their marriage.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's where I thought it was so crazy, is that they kind of started the process in 1963, but it didn't end until 1967. So that's a long time in my opinion. I thought it went a lot faster.
And that's what I'm saying too. I'm like, that was almost the 70s there. And I'm like, this like crazy, like how recent like this was. Cause even when I was young and like people would talk about like, oh, that only happened like whatever 50, whatever years ago or however it was at the time. I'm like, what? That's like, so like not that long ago. Like that's like my grandparents' lifetime basically during like, my grandparents were alive during that time.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just mind blowing.
Yeah, it is. All right, so the aftermath. So I got this from history.com. It says, despite the court's decision, however, some of the states were slow to alter their laws. The last state to officially accept the ruling was Alabama, which
I wanted to talk about that too.
Which only removed their anti-miscegenation statute from its state constitution in 2000. Yes. So literally like 21 years ago, guys.
And I think that's what I wanted to bring up too, because it's interesting. I think it might, because I wanted to bring up the Lincoln, I believe it was a Lincoln episode where we talked about, I forget which state it was that also.
Yes, it was the Lincoln episode.
Or was it? No, it wasn't the 14th Amendment. It was the 13th Amendment. My freaking bad.
Close enough. right, one after the other, right?
So. Yeah, and that I forget which state it was, but they basically took like, it was like recent, basically too, where they finally.
Harriet
I don't remember.
Like, you know,
if Alec was
right
here,
next to
she would
each other.
Know, but she's
right?
Not here.
Alec, what the hell? You're not allowed to move ever again.
But it was, I forget which state it was again, but one of the states took like forever to say that they are going to acknowledge basically the 13th Amendment and start like, you know, doing that for their state. And then I guess some dude was like, realized this, and then they finally changed it. But yeah, my mind was blown when I saw that. I was like, 2000.
Yeah.
Like what?
In addition to its implications for interracial marriage, Loving versus Virginia was also invoked in a subsequent court case concerning same-sex marriage. So in 2015, for example, very similar name, Judge Anthony Kennedy. Okay, Kennedy's cited the Loving
relation
case.
Or no relation?
I didn't look it up, but come on. We can take a guess there. In his opinion on the Supreme Court case, these were names I also thought I should look up, but I did not. Obergefell versus Hodges, which legalized gay marriage across the United States. So that's also very, wait, first of all, again, one of the big things that I don't know if they said in the documentary or in the movie, but they were saying, how could they lose this case with a name like Loving mm-hmm. versus Virginia, you mm-hmm. know, like everyone's going to be like, choose Loving. Why would you choose Virginia? Yeah. So, that's like a perk of having that name, I guess.
Oh, and can I say one more thing? Yeah. Sorry, I don't want to interrupt you, but going back to that ruling for Alabama, I forgot to say this when we're talking about it, my bad. But I guess they, when they overturned it, or like they, what is it? They like enacted whatever the ruling of the Mississippi, whatever the
thing. Yeah.
You guys know what I'm talking about. I guess only, I mean, to me, it's an only 60% of people voted to endorse that ballot initiative that removed the anti-miscegenation language from the state's constitution. I'm like, how only 60%? In the year 2000, how only 60%? I'm like, that's not a good look. I feel like, I don't know. But anyways, continue. Sorry. I forgot to throw that bit in there. Because like my mind was blown when I saw that. I'm like, how? I feel like that's not enough. Like that's, to me, that
well,
seems
it was
like a
enough
low percentage.
Because they did remove it. But,
but I mean, it should have
been overwhelming, right? It should have been like almost like unanimous.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyways, go on. Sorry.
Strange. No, it's okay. But all I want to say about the effects is that, like, obviously, nowadays we see a lot more interracial relationships. Like, I'm in one, and you know, it's like we can't even fathom it being illegal, you know? And the other thing I thought was really cool is how they were able to use this case for the same-sex marriage laws as well. Again, that's another thing that I'm like, why is that a big deal? You know, like, why are we, it's so crazy. But
I
kind
of had a feeling when I was watching the movie that they would have, because I didn't really know for sure that they did use this case when they were trying to decide those cases for same-sex marriage. But I was like, oh, I feel like they would have to, because I think there was a line in the film where I think it was the Supreme Court said that it's one of the basic civil rights of man to be able to marry whoever you want. Mm-hmm. And when they said that, I was like, okay, well,
they didn't say like man and wife. They specifically
they just said
it's like
a civil, it's a right of man to get married or whatever. And I'm like, okay, then I was like, oh, that makes sense. They should use that for when they, you know, argue same-sex marriage stuff. And then I went, did some research, and I found that they did use that case a lot.
I'm very happy that they were able to use this case in their benefit, which obviously now we do have same-sex marriage. So another fun fact is that on June 12th, the anniversary of the Loving versus Virginia decision, it is now commemorated each year as Loving Day, the holiday which celebrates multiracial families.
I found this quote from Mildred on the 40th anniversary of the decision for her case, and she does talk about same-sex marriage as well. And she says, "My generation was bitterly divided over something that should have been so clear and right. The majority believed that the judge said that it was God's plan to keep people apart and that government should discriminate against people in love. But I have lived long enough now to see big changes. The older generation's fears and prejudices have given way, and today's young people realize that if someone loves someone, they have a right to marry. Surrounded as I am now by wonderful children and grandchildren, not a day goes by that I don't think of Richard and our love, our right to marry, and how much it meant to me to have that freedom to marry the person precious to me, even if others thought he was the wrong kind of person for me to marry. I believe all Americans, no matter their race, no matter their sex, no matter their sexual orientation, should have that same freedom to marry. Government has no business imposing some people's religious beliefs over others, especially if it denies people's civil rights. I am still not a political person, but I am proud that Richard's and my name is on a court case that can help reinforce the love, the commitment, the fairness, and the family that so many people, black or white, young or old, gay or straight, seek in life. I support the freedom to marry for all. That's what loving and loving are all about. And I was like, ooh, I was even just reading it right now. I was getting kind of goosebumps.
Yeah, you know, I think it was Philip who said that, you know, Mildred and Richard, first of all, I'm pretty sure he said that he didn't like Richard when he first met him. And not only, just mostly because of the way, like when you first meet Richard, you're like, he's got that kind of scary look to him. He's this big guy. And he also seems like that redneck from the South type of look, I guess. And that, or I guess that stereotype, as he said in the documentary, but he just said that, you know, not only that, but Richard just so hard to get anything out of him, like just communicating to him. He was non-responsive to like everything. And then he said, you know, with Mildred, it's not like she spoke anymore. Like she was also very quiet, but when she did speak, she articulated so well what she was thinking or what she wanted. And just listening to you say that quote, it's like so true. Like clearly she knows how to articulate like what she wants. And they said the same thing with the letter when she contacted the ACLU, is the same thing. She was also so articulate as well, as like, you know, I'm in this situation. I can't afford a lawyer. I need help. If you can help me, please contact me, in a sense. So, and I like that they show that in the film as well, how like, you know, when they would go into the office, Richard just like sat there and they were like,
yeah, like, and she was just like, we'll be listening there, whatever.
Yeah. And it's, I think it makes the most sense that that was their character. Well, that's who they are as well. Like, I think Richard just wanted to happily live with his family in the quiet. He did not want to make a big deal out of anything at all. He would just, and she was like, no, like we actually have to kind of make this a big deal, you know, for our children, for future generations. Like, I'm sorry it's us, but get the fuck over it.
Yeah. You know? And yeah, they were very much like country folk too, because I mean, obviously they didn't like the attention, city life too.
Oh, and like, that, yeah.
Washington, D.C., because they're just quiet people. They enjoy like keeping to themselves and, you know, just
they
watching have their kids play out in the grass, like they were, yeah, you know, whatever.
Well, they have that community as well, you know, where it was easy to just run across the field to get some, like, I don't know, some sugar from your neighbor, you know. And yeah, especially with the getting hit by a car, I'm sure Mildred was like beyond pissed, because that would not happen if they, you know, were out in the country. And now that we're kind of towards the end of this and we're talking about like who they are, that's another reason why I just like love them so much as a couple, or like as the kind of people who represented this and went into this case as well, is because I just felt like sometimes, I think nowadays we kind of always see these people as like chasing the clout or something. They just do this for the clout. And I love that they kind of weren't, well, they weren't like that at all. Even when they went to go interview them, right? There was one interview where they're like, Richard, do you have anything to say? He's like, nope. And that was it. And
yeah,
it's just how they were. They were just so humble, and it really humbled me just watching the film and then even watching any interviews that they were in.
So
the children.
Yes, the children. Okay. I'm like interested in this.
Are you ready?
Yes.
So Richard and Mildred had three kids, Sydney, Donald, and Peggy. Sydney actually isn't Richard's biological son, which what? Yes, I know. And they made it seem like that in the film.
But that's when she was pregnant, right?
No, that she was pregnant with Donald. She already had Sydney. Oh. Yeah. So Sydney. But
in the film, they made it seem like that was like her first kid and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mildred had Sydney from a previous relationship. He was born on January 27th, 1957. So yeah, they got married June 2nd, 1958. And so yeah, she was pregnant with Richard's son when they decided to get married. So I got this from the Cinemaholic. They said that in 1975, Sidney joined the army and later was given an honorable discharge. In 2007, he married Mary Yarborough.
So Sidney took the Richard's last name then, or like, I'm assuming, right. Richard like adopted
yes,
him or something.
Yes, yes. Okay. Yeah, basically. And the two, so he had two daughters, and Sidney passed away in May of 2010 due to reasons that are not publicly known. He was 53 at the time. So another thing I wanted to point out, especially when I learned that Sidney actually isn't Richard's son, or biologically, because he is, because Richard raised him, I think maybe that's why Richard wanted to marry Mildred. Maybe he saw Mildred, you know, because she had a son from a previous relationship, and nothing is really said about Sidney's father. Maybe mm-hmm. Richard just didn't want Mildred to feel like she'd be in that situation again. You know, yeah, like maybe that's sure, why yeah. he was so like determined to get married, not only because they love each other, but he wanted to give her that like respect. Yeah. So Donald's the second son, and he was born on October 8th, 1958. Donald reportedly worked for KMM Telecommunications in Fredericksburg. That's a long word. So he got married to Catherine A. Loving, and he's also a father. However, not much else is known about him. Donald unfortunately passed away in August of 2000. The event was unexpected, and Donald was 41 at the time.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Super sad. Peggy, who is the only daughter of the Lovings, is the only surviving child. She has three children and was able to be a consultant for the movie Loving. She said the actors did a great job, and it was like watching her parents. She's proud of what their parents did, and when she sees an interracial couple with children, she thinks to herself how her parents helped make that relationship mm-hmm. open and legal and basically happen.
Yeah. And I saw a little like clip again of like an interview with her. And
she's like emotional, right?
Yeah. Yeah. She was very emotional when she's talking about it. She was like, oh, like basically like she's like, yeah, like you said, proud that like people can get married to whoever they want. And she's like, and it's because of my parents, basically. Mm-hmm. And obviously she was emotional crying during it. And I was like,
oh. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure when she sees like something that reminds her of her family, it probably.
And it's so sad because she was probably like, I mean, she was really young when her dad passed away too. And
yeah. I'm oh sure, yeah. We. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's in the movie, but yeah, I think it was like 7 or 8 years after they passed.
I think
passed
it was seven.
Okay. When they won their case. Yeah. Richard was killed in a car accident, and Mildred lost vision in her right eye, I believe. So
that's just. Yeah. That's what they didn't say in the film, mm-hmm. that she was also in the car with Richard and was also had some injuries from it. Yeah. Or whatever, but.
And she passed away in 2008. Yes. Well, very young, as well, at 68.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen any photos of like the kids? Well, I mean, I've seen photos. Obviously, I have one as my background of them as a, like little kids, but of, like them and like their, I don't know, I'm assuming young adult, teenage, life.
I saw one photo and Mildred, it was like with Mildred and she was wearing sunglasses and like the two boys and the daughter are in the back.
Their son, Donald, he looked like groovy. Like he was like, I don't know. Yes.
Yeah, no, the picture
like,
yeah,
they
I saw,
all
they
looked
were
very like groovy, like at the time period or whatever. And I was just like, groovy. Fine. But that's what I thought, because that's what I wanted to see. Like, I was like, I want to see them as like younger adults or whatever. And then, mm-hmm. And then I saw that and I was like, oh my God, this picture is pretty cool. Cause it's just, I don't know, it's just like them. And then I think what's her name? Mildred was holding a picture of like not Donald.
Right.
Who was it? Richard. There you go. I was like,
they have like a friend, his best friend. I think his name is, oh my God, I was going to say Richard, but I think it's like Raymond or something. Raymond Green has his best friend, and he did a lot of interviews for the documentary. And yeah, it's just kind of weird because, again, you think this happened like 1,000 years ago. So when I like found out that they both had passed away, I'm like, well, duh, it's like 1,000 years ago. And then it's like, wait a minute. No, they could technically still be around to this day. And if their friend was around long enough to even be in documentaries and even the movie, then it's like, it's just, that's what's heartbreaking. But I did see them smoke a lot. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it, you know. You know what I did not like about the movie is how they like bleached Josh's like eyebrows.
Oh yeah. I like, for some reason, it took me a minute to like place who he was, because I feel like he looked so like different but like familiar. Like I was like, well, who, like whatever. Even the girl, I know I've seen her in something before too, but I couldn't like place it for the longest time. But I feel like they looked like,
yeah, there was a part of me that was like watching, I was like, do we have to go this extreme? It's like, I just felt like it was so
obvious,
distracting for me. I was like, I know.
And also, I think the actress who played Mildred was a lot shorter than Mildred.
Yes, because Mildred,
like, she looked a lot shorter than.
Mildred
looked like she was a tall woman.
Yeah, there was like when I watched that scene where they were like walking out of the courthouse and Richard and Mildred were holding hands. I'm like, holy crap, she's like almost taller than him. And then I was like, wait, she's wearing heels. And I look and I'm like, her heels are like what, an inch tall? You know, they're not, they're not 6 inch heels. Other than that, that was it. That's like my only critique for the movie. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us this week on The Internet Historians. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and give us a rating. We would also love to connect with you, so give us a follow on Instagram and subscribe to us on YouTube as well. Next week, we'll be discussing the African-American woman who worked for NASA during the space race from the movie Hidden Figures. So don't forget to tune in. Thanks again, and we will see you next week.
Bye. See y'all later.